Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is David Ferriero, Archivist of the United States and Head of the National Archives and Records Administration. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Cayatta. David, in the previous segments, you've mentioned the electronic records archives. I would like to know a little bit more about it, but particularly, how is it facilitating the preservation and access of electronic government records? And what are you doing to adapt the system to better usability?
So this is a technology project that I inherited 3 years ago, a project that had been underway for some time, planning in the late 90s. I actually signed a contract with a contractor in the early 2000s. And so a lot of thinking and development had gone into it. For me, the missing piece, and one that I think we've compensated for now, is the voice of the user. So this is a system that was built for the agencies, and we didn't get a whole lot of review participation by the agencies. So we're compensating for that now. I have an advisory committee made up of folks from agencies and university and technology that has been reinvigorated in my 3 years. So we're getting some outside perspective on what we're building. And in fact, one of those members of the of that advisory committee has just been hired on as staff. So there's some spillover effect from that level of participation. So we have built a system that is not the best in the world, but it's getting there because of the fact that we have people testing and advising us, and we're adapting to the new needs. My biggest concern has to do with user access. Mm-hmm. We're early in the ingestion, so all of those records are not available yet for public access, but that's the next frontier to ensure that it's not good enough to ingest. We have to be able to get the stuff out of there. So that's the biggest push now.
The use of social media in the United States and the expectation that what you want to find, it needs to be a social media platform to find it, that's growing exponentially. Would you describe the current media landscape within the U.S. government and what the archives is doing to work with other agencies in this area?
You're right. It is the next frontier. The use of social media is huge and growing. Every agency, every cabinet-level agency now has a Facebook page and at least one, and a Twitter account. And it's growing exponentially. Since we are responsible for providing guidance, we have provided guidance to the agencies and the White House on the records implication of their use of social media, ask a series of questions about, is this the kind of information that's being shared in these social media platforms? Is that record? And how are you planning to capture it? Part of the directive in terms of the work that we're doing in as a result of the directive has to do with social media capture. In terms of all the electronic information, this is the new frontier. Mm-hmm. This is actually the most exciting because it's a different, the quality of the content is different than more formal communication. It's more immediate and much more, if you're serious about the voice of the people, much more interactive. And it's really exciting to think about 100 years from now for people to be able to see how the American public was engaging with their government in this new way.
So I believe you've been doing some experimentation in this area, such as the Citizen Archivists and the Citizen Archivist Dashboard initiatives. What else is being done in this area, or if you could describe those initiatives to help meeting what you've been referring to?
So if the National Archives is responsible for guiding the agencies and the White House on their uses of social media, that means it's kind of a no-brainer. That means the archives has to be out there in front in terms of its use of those social media platforms in order to understand how they're being used. So I have encouraged my staff to every possible social media platform, get out there, experiment, and learn from your own experiences. So me personally, you know, I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I have a blog, so I'm out there myself. The Citizen Dashboard initiative is something I'm very proud of. And in fact, we just won the Administrative Council's Walter Gellman Innovation Award for Administrative Conference, sorry, of the United States, their Walter Gellman Innovation Award for the Citizen Archivist Dashboard. It is based on the president's message that we don't have all the answers. This is a way of engaging the American public and helping us do our work. So we have, this is an interesting factoid, lots of that 12 billion pages is in cursive. They don't teach cursive in school anymore. I think there are only three states that where cursive is still taught, K through 12. We have a generation of kids who can't read these records. So we are engaging the American public in transcribing records. We've got thousands of records up. You can go online and help us transcribe them. We have opportunities for you to tag photographs. We've got, as I said, 40 million photographs. Not all the people identified in them. So we've got opportunities for people to help us catalog our photo collection. So there are a number of, there are five or six different opportunities for people to engage. One of the really exciting citizen archivist activities was a crowdsourcing effort around the 1940 census. In April, we released the 1940 census in electronic form, the first one in electronic form. And we didn't have the resources to do the name index, so unless you knew exactly the location that you were looking for, you couldn't be successful. We had 160,000 volunteers around the country working state by state to create the name index, which they did in 3 months. So an example of citizen archivists at work.
Earlier, you described one of the roles that the archives has of being the stewards of classified information. Declassification performs a service crucial to a democratic society. When data is over 25 years old, you want to make it available to the public as soon as possible. What are some of the key challenges in this area, and how does the National Declassification Center work to address those challenges?
Let me start with one of the overarching problems which that Information Security Oversight Office deals with that I talked about. There are in operation now within the federal government more than 2,500 different classification guides. So it's not as if there's classified means classified across the government. There are 2,500 different kind of interpretations of that. So that's the one of the overriding factors. So we're now in this National Declassification Center, which was created by executive order at the end of 2009, reviewing 361 million pages of classified content going back to the World War I. And we have reviewed all 361 pages, so we know exactly what we have. And it's not as if this executive order gave the Archivist of the United States the authority to release this material. It gave me the authority to convene the equity holders, those who classified them, to review for decision for release. Two criteria spelled out in the executive order by which it can remain classified: weapons of mass destruction, national security. Those are the only two criteria by which it can remain classified. So that means working with the agencies to review, and there's some very positive work that has been done to identify those records of an age that can quickly be reviewed. Some legislation that was passed in late 1990s, early 2000, the Kyle Law, requires page-by-page review of a whole category of material, which has slowed us down there. But of the records that have been through complete processing, 61% of them have been released to the open shelves. So it's progress.
So, David, as part of your charge, you need to balance the need for access to archives holdings and make sure that they're secure. What are you doing to enhance information security, protect the integrity of the content, and ensure that any restrictions on use are properly honored?
So one of the lessons learned in this long career of working in research institutions with valuable materials is never trust anyone. establishing this balance between access and protection. And I've been through some horrible situations. The New York Public Library, a person who was a map dealer and very close to us, a member of the family, basically, ended up stealing 72 maps from the New York Public Library and others, hundreds of maps from six other institutions. So, as I said, never trust anyone. Establishing mechanisms that sensitize the staff to paying attention to how material is being used, where it is, and creating formal processes for ensuring that material is not leaving facilities unauthorized. So, 3 years ago when I arrived, I discovered as I walked out of the building my first night that no one was checking my bags. Everywhere I've ever worked, my bags were inspected. We inspect users' bags, but we don't inspect staff bags. So, instituting, just always paying attention to security, never assuming that you've got it right. We created a holdings protection team that has oversight now for those kinds of processes. We have within our Inspector General's office a wonderful archival recovery team that is surfing eBay, going to trade shows, looking for records that may have left the National Archives. So vigilance is the watchword on the part of the staff, but also engaging the user community about educating them, about paying attention to what the person at the next table is doing. And unfortunately, a large part of the problem is internal. Studies have shown that about 75% of theft is staff. So paying attention to those kinds of issues. We had a long-term staff member responsible for our film collection who turns out was actually stealing our film. So those kinds of situations really hurt.
So as we close this segment, I wanted to understand, how are you folks tackling the storage and space, the physical storage and space issue? How does technology such as cloud computing fit into that?
So for the paper records, we're in 44 facilities around the country. And we, I think, have been pretty clever out in Kansas and Illinois by using caves. Wonderful limestone caves, which have been converted into storage facilities for records. So as we prepare for this transition to electronic records and the paper declines, the focus now, of course, is on storage for the electronic records. And we are now experimenting with the cloud. The cloud is the answer.
How does the National Archives cultivate civic literacy? We will ask David Ferriero, Archivist of the United States, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.